I want to make a few preliminary remarks about the homework and discussion section, since I didn't mention anything last time. First, there are specific homework problems for sections 5.3, 5.4, and so on, and they're listed on the course website. So if you go to the website for this course, there's a link to a list of homework problems that you should do. For example, in section 5.3, there are a couple of problems, 13, 37, 55, and 67, etc. If you look at the problems, they're not the most easy, trivial, rote problems in the section. They're chosen in the hopes that they won't completely bore you. So they're somewhat interesting, every single one of them. Also, as you know, there's a discussion section on Tuesdays that's led by a graduate student named Dan. And attendance at the discussion section is not mandatory. It's something that's optional, but of course strongly recommended. The goal of the discussion section is that by the time you leave it, you'll know how to do every single one of the homework problems, one way or another, either by asking other people who come to the discussion who know how to do the problems, or by asking Dan, or by figuring out the problems yourself. So it's a very clear goal to the discussion section, which is that no matter how you go into the discussion, you will leave really understanding how to do the homework problems. Okay, so that's the goal of the discussion section. It's to give you an extra, possibly funner way to get your head around the homework problems than just trying to do them in the library or something. So, also, if you find that you do very well and figure out the homework problems, you can go to the discussion section and explain to other people how you did the problems. Also, as a reminder, the first quiz is next Friday, January 20th. So everybody here should ace the first quiz. All you have to do is understand how to do the homework problems and remember that, and you'll get a perfect score on the first quiz. Okay? Because the quiz is just two problems off the homework. And the quiz will be at the end of class. But another thing is you need to come to class in order to take it. Let's see, what else? Oh, also, I've been typing up notes. Basically, when I make notes up for the class, I type possibly a lot more than I'll actually have time to say in here. So if you go to the course website, you can download these and look at them, and you might find them useful as an extra thing to read. Again, the course website is... modular.ucsd.edu/15b. Right, so what we'll talk about today is section 5.4, which is about, there are really two things. One is the notion of an antiderivative or indefinite integral, and the other is a restatement of the fundamental theorem of calculus in a way that hopefully will give you some more physical intuition for what it means. So first, antiderivatives, or indefinite integrals. So this is some notation. It's similar to the notation for derivative. The derivatives, if you have a function f of x, then you denote its derivative by f prime of x. It's the derivative of f. And it's nice to have a simple notation for the derivative. It's actually somewhat controversial, this particular notation. You'll find, for example, Newton, one of the inventors of calculus, I think he put a dot over the f instead. And people also write df dx sometimes. But this is a reasonable notation for the derivative. If you have a function f, and it's continuous, I convinced you last time, hopefully, that there's a function capital F whose derivative is equal to little f. So last time, we saw that there is a function capital F such that the derivative of capital F is equal to little f. And it would be nice to have a notation for this capital F, similar to what we have here. Given a function, its derivative is denoted f prime of x. What about its integral? So here's the notation. There it is. Just denote the integral by the sign f of x dx. There's one problem, though. There can be lots of different functions, as some of you pointed out at the end last time, all of which have derivative f of x. If you have any function, capital F, and its derivative is little f, then that function plus a constant also has derivative little f. Is this the only problem that can happen? Is there any other way there could be extra functions with derivative little f that don't just differ from one of them by adding on some constant? Any ideas? So it's a loaded question. It's a little unfair. Let's assume that f is defined, is continuous on the interval. If you have two functions and their derivative is little f, do they differ by a constant? So raise your hand if you think the answer is yes, they must differ by a constant. You think it's yes. Don't put your hand up if you think the answer is no. So everybody here thinks the answer is no, that maybe something funny can happen. I mean, it's good to be skeptical. You're just very confident, right? Okay, so he's right. It turns out that optimism is good in mathematics. If you have two functions, f of x and g of x, and f prime is equal to little f, and g prime is equal to little f, then they just differ by a constant. This is under this hypothesis. G of x is a constant plus f. Antiderivatives are integrals. If you have a function, then it has an antiderivative up to a constant. So if you just say plus the constant, and you get all of them. The reason this is true is because you just take the difference of two. If f and g both have derivative little f, take their difference, and that has derivative f prime minus g prime, and these are both equal to f, so it has derivative 0. It's a function with slope 0, so it has to be a constant function. So f x minus g of x is equal to some constant. And that's why this is true. Some other constant. Okay, so given a function little f, you denote a function up to constants capital F with derivative little f by integral of f of x dx. And you call that either the indefinite or an indefinite integral of f or an antiderivative of f. Indefinite integral and antiderivative are synonyms. So when you hear those words, they mean the same thing. And again, it's just given a function, an antiderivative or indefinite integral is just another function whose derivative is your original function. That's all. Okay, let's see if we can compute something. What is an antiderivative of the function x?
1 half x squared.
Excellent. 1 half x squared. There you go. And I'll put plus a constant, since if you add any constant to this, you also get an antiderivative. Okay, let's do another one. What is the indefinite integral of sine of x dx?
Cosine. Negative cosine.
Excellent. I'm sure out there I heard it. Minus cosine of x plus a constant. How about the... How about 1 over 1 plus x squared dx? Don't think it's cosine squared. Close. Log is the antiderivative of 1 over x. So this is similar. It's not ln of x. But they're all good guesses. 1 over 1 plus x? Well, let's just leave this one blank. Don't you wish you knew? And if you look at the table in section 5.4, you'll find the answer. And you'll find a couple of others like this. There's a list of about 15 integrals, so that if you know all of them, you have a much better chance of doing really difficult or seemingly difficult integrals. Much of this course is simply about basically playing a game. You get a puzzle, it's kind of like a solitary game or something. You get a puzzle, which is a function, and you have to compute an antiderivative of it. And I'm going to teach you strategies for winning at this game, for being able to solve this puzzle. And one of the strategies is to learn a few examples like this one, and then try to transform a given integral into one that you already know something about. By the way, whenever you successfully compute one of these antiderivatives, you've done something amazing. You've constructed something that allows you to compute the area under any little piece of the graph of one of these functions. I mean, that's really amazing. Any time, like when you've computed this or this one, you have now a mathematical gadget that allows you to quickly compute areas under curves. And areas under curves are one of the most basic things in understanding a lot of different ideas in physics, chemistry, biology, economics, etc. Okay, just for emphasis, to emphasize the difference in notation, if I write integral from a to b f of x dx, that's something. And if I write integral without the a to b, that's something else. The first one is a specific number. So this is a number. And the second one is a function, or more precisely, a family of functions. You have one function for each choice of constant. So these are two very different types of objects. One is a specific number, the other a family of functions, or a function. So right here, integral of sine of x is minus cosine plus some constant. But over here on the blackboard last time, when we were finding the area under one of the bumps of the sine function, we got a specific number by computing the definite integral from 0 to pi of sine of x. Okay? Any questions? So really, again, I think the main goal of this course, just to emphasize it, is to compute integral f of x dx, compute these antiderivatives. There are a lot of other things that come along the way. There's some really nice applications. But for better or worse, that's really the main goal of this course. There's a lot of nice things that you get out of this. For example, the tricks that allow you to compute, the techniques really that allow you to compute these things, involve manipulating integrals. And these manipulations, even if you weren't successfully able to compute one, might be in and of themselves really useful for understanding some application. But really, this is what you're going to be able to do at the end of the course. You'll be amazingly good at taking something in computing integral. So keep your eyes on that question throughout the whole course. Here's another example. So this is, it's a question, it's a problem. Let's compute a function whose derivative is square root of 5 over x, that quantity. And in case you don't remember, I'll quickly remind you that for any a, real number a except minus 1, this is equal to 1 over a plus 1, x to the a plus 1 is the constant. There's a problem when a is equal to minus 1, because then you would have 1 over 0 here. And in that case, as people were calling out earlier and reminded possibly by this, you get log an absolute value of x. So integral 1 over x dx, which is exactly the same thing as x to the minus 1 dx. This is equal to log absolute value of x, constant. So these are just two things that are useful to know. Now let's go back to this example. Let's compute an antiderivative of square root of 5 over x. So what we'll do is, first I'm going to rewrite it slightly differently, but completely equivalently, in a way that will make it easier to apply to what's above. So you can write this as square root of 5 times 1 over square root of x dx. So I'm just using basic arithmetic here. And now one fact about integrals is that you can factor out a constant. That's one of the properties of integrals. It's like if you have this, when you have the limits and the infinite sum, you can put the constant on the other side of the sum, you get the same answer. So like this. And now this 1 over square root of x, that's the same as x to some power. What power?
Negative 1/2.
The answers are converging to minus 1/2, which is good. It's minus 1/2, x to the minus 1/2. Excellent. Root 5 plus integral x to the minus 1/2 dx. Okay. Any questions? All right, now you get to apply this with a equal to minus 1/2, and you'll get the answer. So what do you get?
Square root of 5 times 2 x to 1/2, or square root of x, square root of x.
Help me do it very, very slowly, step by step. So a is minus 1/2. So it's 1 over minus 1/2 plus 1. X to what power? 1/2. Excellent. Plus there's the constant now. And now you simplify it and get, so that's 1/2 on the bottom, so it's 2, as you said. 2 root 5 x to the 1/2 plus 2, which you can also just write as square root x. Okay? So that's another example of computing an indefinite interval.
Keep in mind the square root of 5 and x.
Sure, you certainly could. This is also equal to 2 root 5x plus c. Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay. Let's do one more example, which will involve using a trig identity. Integral of sine 2x over sine x dx. So this problem, if you know the right trig identity to use, the right double angle formula, you will instantly solve it. And if you don't, you might get very frustrated. So the somebody yell out the identity to use. Think of it. A while.
Sine is
2 sine. That's exactly right. 2 sine x cosine. As you guys said, sine of 2x is 2 sine x plus x. There's some nice formulas from trigonometry for the sine of the sum of two angles, and also for the cosine of the sum of two angles. And you can see how knowing these formulas makes it a lot easier to do a problem like this, because suddenly you get something really easy. So really secretly, in addition to learning how to compute integrals, you're going to get really good at all the basic manipulations of kind of applied math. So, probably the goal of every math course. Okay, so this is 2 cosine of x dx, and that's 2 sine x plus some constant. Okay? Alright, now let's jump back to physical intuition. What does computing an integral mean? What does an integral mean? So what I'm going to do is formulate something which in the text is called the net change theorem. And it's just a generalization of the observations connecting velocity to position for a car that I made last time, but in a lot more generality here. So suppose you have some function, let's call it f of x, that measures a quantity. F of x might be, quantity is in very good sense, measures something. So it could be a position or an amount of water in your bathtub or how much money you have, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of possibilities for what f could be. And here's the net change theorem. This is simply a restatement, really, of the fundamental theorem of calculus, but in more physical terms. So it says the following. So this is just the definition of derivative, really, that f prime of x measures the rate of change of f. And so here's the interesting part. The net change of f is the integral from a to b of f prime of x dx, which by the fundamental theorem of calculus is f of b minus f of a, which is exactly what the phrase net change means. So I'll just give you a whole bunch of examples to try to give you a sense of what I just wrote down on the board. So here's an example. Imagine you're a bathtub, assuming you have a bathtub, and it's full of water. And this function f, let's think of it as a function of time, and it tells you how much water in gallons are in your bathtub. And you have this amazing drain that has a little printout that tells you how much water is going out of the drain when it's draining. So that would be the derivative. It measures the rate of change in the volume. So the neat thing is you could just watch the little display on your drain telling you how much water's draining out, like what the flow rate is. And you could, just by watching that, you can tell the total amount of water that flowed out. Or precisely the integral of the rate of change from the starting time to the ending time is the total change, how much the starting amount of water minus the amount of water at the end of when you're measuring it. So that's one example. Here's another example. Suppose you're, there's a dragon pacing back and forth on the cliffs over by Del Mar. And the velocity of the dragon as he paces back and forth is given by the following formula. T squared minus 2t minus 8. Okay? And this is during some time. So it starts, we watch him pacing at time 1, and at time maybe 6 hours later, or 6 minutes later, he stops. So this statement here says that, so this is the rate of change of his position. Let me draw a little diagram for you. So this is the top of one of the cliffs over Del Mar. Dragon. Where's the dragon? And this dragon is pacing back and forth. It's at position 0. And this function gives us the velocity of the dragon. So the dragon is going back and forth, etc. So, oh, please.
Do you have a comment?
So, you can ask some questions. What is the net rate? I mean, what is the net change in the position of the dragon from time 1 to time 6? So, at time 1, let's say the dragon's here. This is position 0. Oh, actually, I guess we know where the dragon is from the. Oh, no, we don't know where the dragon is. But that position 0 at time. And we know the rate of change of the position of the dragon, that's the velocity. We can use that to figure out the net change at from time 1 to time 6. We can figure out where the dragon is at time 6 just from the fact that the velocity is t squared minus 2t minus 8, and knowing that the dragon starts out at 0. So let's do that. So question. Where is the dragon at time t2 equals 6? And we can solve that using this. The integral from t1 to t2 of the velocity is the change in position. It'll tell us the new position of the dragon. Now we're going to step back and spend like 10 minutes computing that integral, well, maybe less than 10 minutes, and then we'll find out the new position of the dragon. Another question is, how far does the dragon pace? The dragon paces back and forth. The dragon might get back to, you know, very close to where it started, so the net change in its position might be very small, even though the actual amount of distance it's gone is pretty big. So let's figure out exactly what happened in this case. Any questions? Is this clear? Okay, so we have to figure out what integral to set up. Here we have the change in some quantity. Our capital F is the position. And the change in position, and the derivative of position is the velocity. So this is f prime. So the answer to this question, where is the dragon at time 6? Well, it's the integral from 1 to 6 of velocity dt. And that's integral from 1 to 6 of t squared minus 2t minus 8. Dt. And after some of the integrals we just did, this one seems ridiculously easy. So let's do it. So before, what we did was computed some antiderivative. That was great. thought it was the dragon. Okay, so what we'll do in order to evaluate this integral is find an antiderivative of this quadratic polynomial, and then evaluate it at 6, and then subtract off the value at 1. So this is our function. We need to find an antiderivative. So So it's one, an antiderivative is 1/3 t cubed minus t squared minus 8t. Here I'm using that the integral of, I guess I'm using what I wrote over there with a equal to an integer. So it's just what's over there. And x is equal to t. So this notation, square brackets, and then these two numbers, it's a shorthand notation for the value of the function inside at the top number minus the value at the bottom number. So in general, if you write, so if capital F is an antiderivative of little f, and you want to explicitly evaluate this, well, it's f of b minus f of a. But frequently, this f is a somewhat complicated function to write down, so you don't want to write it down twice. So what you often do in practice is instead use this shorthand notation, square brackets, capital F of x, a, b. This simply means the value of the function f at b minus the value of the function at a. Okay, it's just more notation. So let's figure out what happens here. So here we have, well, let's substitute 6 in here, and then subtract off what happens when we substitute 1 in. So substituting a 6, you get 1/3 times 6 cubed minus 6 squared minus 8 times 6 minus, and now substituting 1, it's 1/3 minus 1 minus 8. Okay, and now we need to do some arithmetic. So this is 1/3 times 216 minus 36 minus 48 minus, so this is 1/3 minus 9, 1/3 minus 9. Okay, and now,
split it up into two parts. Don't you? Because from 1 to 4, it's going negative, and then from 4 to 6, it's going positive.
Oh, but I'm not integrating the absolute value. I'm just integrating the velocity.
Oh.
And that's what I'll be doing next, is splitting up into two parts when I want to integrate the absolute value of b. So, say you're a little behind, but you're a little ahead. So, but you're right. And in fact, I was thinking about the calculation that occurs when you split it up. So so thank you very much. So let's do this part. It's 1/3. I'm just going to bring the two third factors together. And then the rest we have minus 36 minus 48, which is 784 plus 9. So that's 215 over 3 minus 84 plus 9 minus 75. So it's 215. Minus 3 times 75, which is 225, is that right, over 3? Good.
I got the same answer, so this is the whole answer, and I did completely different.
Okay, can you get this answer?
I got the same answer, but I did the reduction in a different order.
Excellent. That makes me more confident. So there you are, at the end of doing some fractions, you get this number. Actually, I think this is right. So that's it. The dragon started out here. It paced back and forth. We don't know exactly how. We just have a formula for how it paced. And from time 1 to time 6, it ended up at minus 10/3. So it's somewhere over here. This is where the dragon ended up. A red chalk, for example. All right, now we might wonder, how far did the dragon walk in pacing back and forth and ending up over here? And for that, you integrate the absolute value of v of t. You integrate the speed. Let's see. because you get that because, you know, he walks this way for a while, and then if you integrate the absolute value, you get the other side with the negative sign, so you end up always getting the plus. So, in other words, let's see. So, let's find the total distance problem. This is the integral of the absolute value of d of t, dt from 1 to 6. Now, a tricky thing here is that there's not a simple, or there's not as simple of a formula for an antiderivative of the absolute value as for this original function. So what you want to do is figure out, you have to somehow understand. Yes?
Find the zeros of the function.
Perfect. You find the zeros of the function. That allows you to figure out what the absolute value is, or to give a nice formula for the absolute value. So to avoid any additional confusion, let's draw some sort of graph of this function. So we're interested in the function as t varies from 1 through 6, but it is useful to think about what the function's like elsewhere. So the function I'm talking about is d of t, the t-axis, and we're going to graph y equals v of t. So v of t is t squared minus 2t minus 8. And it's just a quadratic. So the graph that you want to find is zeros. That will tell you where it intersects the t-axis. Or maybe it goes like that. I guess the leading coefficient is positive. So you'll figure out where it intersects the t-axis, and that will give you a good sense of what the picture looks like. So let's figure out where this is equal to zero. There are two ways you could do that, at least. One is you could use the quadratic formula to solve for the zeros of this quadratic. Another is that you could factor the polynomial, and then from that you easily see where the zeros are. So let's factor it. So it's t minus something times t minus something else. And,
t.
Okay. And you could, one very dumb way would be to just guess whatever as long as the divisors, as long as this term matches up, and then multiply it out and make sure it works. And that, in fact, does work. So it has a 0 at t equal to 4, and it has a 0 at minus 2. So the graph has to look like this, of this quadratic equation. So this tells us that right when we started observing the dragon, it was the velocity is negative. That means it's going in this direction. So the old dragon is pacing along this way. And then eventually, at time 4, there were some pedestrians or surfers, so the dragon turned around and started walking back for 2 seconds. And it ended up somewhere. Now, we figured out where it ended up. It ended up over here, so it didn't get all the way back to where it started. And that makes sense, given the picture. It only walked back for about 2 seconds. But we don't know, so far, the total distance that the dragon traveled as it paced this way and then turned around and paced back. We just know where it ended up. We can figure out the total distance it traveled by computing the integral of the absolute value of the velocity function. The absolute value of the velocity function, well, when the velocity function is positive, it's just equal to itself. That's the absolute value. When the velocity is negative, the absolute value is up here, so it looks like this. So this is the function that we want to integrate. We'll find one formula for, well, we'll just break it up into two intervals. One is the integral here, and the other is the integral here. And that will tell us the total distance traveled.
Isn't it we only count for 1 to 6? Because now it's from like 2 to 6.
So I just drew the graph of this quadratic over here, but this part of the function we don't actually know anything about, and it's not relevant to the calculation as you pointed out. So I'm wrong in that we really want to find I mean, this is true that this is the opposite value of this part, but really the part we want to integrate is right here. Thank you very much for your comment. This is the part that we want to find. What's your name? Again?
Karen.
Karen, okay. Thank you, Karen, for your comment. So this is the integral we want to find. Okay, so let's do it. So integrate from 1 to 4 of minus b of t. That gives us the absolute value as a nice function without any absolute value signs from 1 to 4, plus integral from 4 to 6 of just our usual function again. So you might think this is really, really weird. What on earth am I doing? I put a minus sign in order to get the absolute value. Shouldn't that, you know, how can a minus sign possibly help? Yeah, a negative times a negative is positive. So if you have you have this function here that's negative along here, you take its negative, and that's giving you the absolute value, which is up here. Okay? If you plugged in any specific value for t between 1 and 4, and then took its negative, you'd find that that's giving you the absolute value of the number, because the number is always negative along there. See, the thing is, when you compute integrals, it's nice to get rid of the absolute value, since somehow the formulas don't work nicely when there's an absolute value there. Now we've written down a completely equivalent, the same number, this integral, is equal to the original one. This is a specific number, we don't know what it is, but it's the distance traveled by the dragon. And this sum is equal to the same thing, it's just that this one only involves functions that don't have an absolute value sign. We've done a transformation, it's like a move, to get rid of the absolute value sign. And now it's just completely straightforward, it's just like what we did before. It's going to be minus, and then I'll put exactly the same quantity as I have over there. 1/3 t cubed minus t squared minus 8t. Evaluated from 1 to 4, plus the same thing again. 1/3 t cubed minus t squared minus 8t. Again, here evaluated from 4 to 6. Okay, notice the minus sign right here. That's this minus sign. Okay, and you can do this. It's just algebra. And the number that I got when I tried this earlier was 98 divided by 3. That's pretty big. That's about 30, almost 33. So it looks like the dragon went over this way, but when I turned around and went back, it must have gone very quickly right here, more than my graph makes clear. Actually, the graph must be kind of wrong because it got way back over that way. Notice, for example, if you substitute 6 in here, I mean, the graph is qualitatively good, but it's quantitatively off. If you substitute 6 in, you get 36 minus 12 minus 8. Here, and that's 16, which is a lot higher than what I drew here, so it should really be way up there. So it's really a lot of movement back in the other direction. So maybe the dragon was really afraid of the strippers and ran pretty quickly in that direction. Unless I made an error right here. But I believe the integral is 98 over 2. Okay, so that tells us that the total distance the dragon went over, actually, I think I'm making a mistake, so that's just telling me the total distance. So it's just giving us a sense that the dragon really went a long ways before it came back here. Remember, this wasn't very far. This is just about just a little over 3 this way. Okay, so now we have a clear picture of what happened. The dragon started out right here. It walked along this way, and then it turned around at some point and came back. Came back to about 3 feet away from where it started, but it went a total of over 30 feet. So it really went a long ways along its back. You could ask, where did the dragon turn around? I hear a lot of numbers. What was the point at which the dragon spun around in its tracks? At what time did this occur?
4.
Excellent. What position was the dragon at time 4?
18, negative 18.
Negative 18, you said? please justify that. Explain how you get negative 8.
Yeah, I was in the middle of doing the distance calculation, and doing the integral from 1 to 4, we substitute in the values into that earlier equation.
Okay.
And we get, doing the reduction
just the first part.
In the other order, negative 63 over 3 plus 15 plus 24.
So in other words, you were doing the arithmetic to get this, and you ended up with minus 18 for the stuff.
Yes.
Excellent. And see, this was the part that measured how far the dragon went that way towards the surface, and then this is the part that measures how far the dragon is back. And this was minus 18, so that's how far it went when it turned around. Yes, please.
How do you get minus 18 up in here?
Okay, so here's what he says. Sorry. Let me try to explain this again. So here's why he thinks it's minus 18. We broke the interval up into two pieces. One measures how far the dragon walked when it walked toward the surfers, when it was walking, when its velocity, how fast it was going, is negative. And the other part of the integral measures how far it went when the velocity is positive, when it's going back. And this is the part where the velocity is negative. So this tells us how far the dragon goes as it's walking towards the surfers. This tells us how far it goes as it walks back. Is that clear? No?
Why don't we care about time 0 to 1?
You don't have information. You showed up and you looked at your watch and it said 1. And you weren't watching the dragon at time, between time, before time 1. It's completely arbitrary. I could have given a slightly different formula and called the time when we started looking 0. But it was more convenient to use time 1 because then I can use this formula that looks like this. If you use t equal to 0, the polynomial would look a little different because when you substitute in 0, you have to get whatever you get when you substitute in 1 here. Any other comments or questions? All right, so there are 3 minutes left, and I want you to do me a huge favor. Could you take out a piece of paper and answer 2 questions? One is, just think back about the lecture and tell me what was the clearest thing that you heard me say. And second, what was the murkiest, most confusing thing? And by giving me this feedback, I'll be able to give a better lecture on Friday. You can just leave your paper by the door as you leave. So just 2 questions. What was clear? What was murky? Yes, completely anonymous. Don't put your name on it. Just write something clear, something confusing. Okay? And just leave it as you walk out. Look. You do it for practice, and the quizzes are a subset of the homework. Every quiz problem will actually have been a problem on the homework.
Okay.
So if you do the homework, you'll just miss the quizzes. Every single one of them. Sure, anywhere you want. Thanks. Thank you. Thank you. you again later in another lecture.
My name is Jennifer. I'm
If I start messing up, feel free to call me at any time, and I'll try to. Okay, thanks.
Is the lecture time tonight at 7? Oh,
sorry,
exams?
It's only for the midterms. There's only two times during the entire quarter that you've got.
Oh.
Otherwise, just don't even worry about it.
Okay, thanks.
I'm going to be clear about the last part.
Oh, yeah, about the minus 18?
No, no, no. It's 93 over 3, and then something 33.
Oh, I'm sorry. All I was writing was that the number 98 is approximately. So that's the first part. I didn't check that G5. Now they don't be ready. We can do it right now. Did you? No, you did.
Okay.
But that can't be right because it has to be positive. Since it's the total distance.
Okay. Yeah. 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 Yeah.